If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rat patrol on the cat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cast is closed. Rat critics say he's money cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid, what type of facts are those? If you grew up with hoes and you're zapped with toes, you celebrate the minute you was having dope. I'm like, fuck critics, you can kiss my whole asshole. If you don't like my lyrics, you can press fast forward. Got beef with radio if I don't play they show. They don't play my hits. I don't give a shit, so rap mags try and use my black ass so advertisers could give them more cash for ads, fuckers. I don't know what you take me as or understand the intelligence that Jay-Z has. I'm from rags, the richest niggas, I ain't dumb. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. Yeah, it's 94 and my trunk is raw. And my rear view mirror is the motherfucking law. Got two choices, y'all. Pull over the car or bounce on the devil, put the pedal to the floor. And I ain't trying to see no highway chase with Jake. Plus, I got a few dollars, I can fight the case. So I pull over to the side of the road, I heard. Son, do you know why I'm stopping you for? Cause I'm young and I'm black and my hat's real low. Do I look like a mind reader, sir? I don't know. Am I under arrest or should I guess some more? Well, you was doing 55 in the 54. Lost the registration and step out of the car. You carrying a weapon on you, I know a lot of you are. I ain't stepping out of shit, all my papers legit. Well, do you mind if I look around the car a little bit? Well, my glove compartment is locked, so is the trunk in the back. And I know my rights, so you gon' need a warrant for that. Aren't you sharp to attack? You some type of law or something, somebody important or something. I ain't passed the bar, but I know a little bit enough that you wanna legally search my shit. Well, we'll see how smart you are when the K-9 comes. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me! 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me! 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. Now, once upon a time, not too long ago, a nigga like myself had a strong arm, a hoe. And this is not a hoe in the sense of having a pussy, but a pussy having no goddamn sense, trying to push me. I try to ignore him, talk to the Lord, pray for him, but some fools just love to perform. You know the type, loud as a motorbike, but wouldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight. And only thing that's gonna happen is I'ma get the clapping, and he and his boys gonna be yapping to the captain. And there I go, trapped in the Kit Kat again. Back through the system with the riffraff again. Fiends on the floor, scratching again. Paparazzi's with their cameras, snapping them. DA try to give a nigga shaft again. Half a meal for bail, cause I'm African. All because this fool was harassing them. Trying to play the boy like he's saccharine. But ain't none sweet, but I hold my gun. I got 99 pounds, being a bitch ain't one. Hit me. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. Girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, and bitch ain't one. You crazy for this one, Rick? It's your boy.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about what? What do we talk about, Robin?
Comics.
Yay! So that was a little Jay-Z, the Hova, with 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I'm not going to get in trouble for saying that. Today we have a couple of very special guests. Pia Guerra has been dragged, kicking and screaming, to the Inkstead studio. No, it's we had a lovely lunch today, and very happy that Pia's joining us, as well as writer of Why the Last Man, Brian K. Vaughn, is on the phone. I got you there, Brian.
Hi, everybody.
Excellent.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Pia.
Hi, Brian.
Hello, everyone.
Pia's unfortunately suffering from a terrible flu that's kicking Vancouver's
everybody
ass.
Everybody in the studio is going to have it by the end of the week.
I think I have something too. It might be the writing the end of the book is release some sort of plague that's going to end us all.
Yeah, I was expecting to get sick at the end of this, but I thought it would be like when I finished the drawing. I didn't think it would be on the day the book came out. It was kind of ridiculous, actually.
It's going to kill off all the comic geeks.
Yeah.
the world would be a lot less interesting. So congratulations, I guess, is the operative word here. Both of you, I guess, 5 years in the making. Has it been pretty much monthly the whole time?
Yeah, right up until the very end, where we just we took a little extra time so PA could draw this huge behemoth final issue all by herself. But yeah, other than that, we've been, you know, as far as monthly books go these days, remarkably on time.
I remember as a young man reading Sandman, and you never knew when it was actually going to end. You knew which issue number, but it would be like four issues between an issue, you know.
Always worth the wait, though.
Yeah, it was a fantastic ending. But I got to say, I'm a happy boy. It was closure, you know, well put together. You know?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Full circle it comes. So I guess I'll start out with a kind of a broad question, because Y has really pulled a lot of people in of interest and stuff. And what do you think it is about Y that's really piqued the interest, that's really been such a, I don't know.
Pia, do you have an answer for that?
I don't know. I think I always figured that it just resembles the Perfect Date movie. It has something for guys, has something for girls. It has things that, you know, you'd think guys wouldn't like, but they secretly do. Same with women. So I think women do secretly like action films, and some guys do like secretly a good relationship story. So it's perfect. It's the perfect blend of both.
Has a lot of cliffhangers.
It's true. I always give credit to Pia, because I think most people who don't read comics want to read comics. Everyone sort of wants into the club, but most comics are really difficult to read if you haven't been reading them your whole life. It's not the most accessible medium, and I think Pia's artwork is really not only inviting, but it is it's so readable. If the only comics you've ever read are the Sunday Funnies, it is so easy to fall into the story, and that is a deceptively hard skill. So I like to think it's my brilliant writing or the genius high concept, but I think if it had been with another artist, it would not have gotten the sort of mainstream penetration, which sounds dirty, but it would not have gotten that without her.
Well, I'll say this now. We are in Canada, so
I'll
do a blanket statement of listener discretion be advised.
Thank you.
So you're not going to be fined $10,000 for saying duty.
Oh, this is fantastic. I desperately want to swear now, but I'll be polite.
Motherfucker! I guess, and I'm trying not to do too much backtrack questions, but when you originally had your concept in mind, with Pia's artwork, it's definitely less about style and more about storytelling. Was that something you're going for off the bat, which is really like solid cartooning?
I don't know. I mean, style is sort of a deceptive word. I think Pia has a totally unique style.
I just mean like people that are overly rendered and stylized.
Oh, I mean, you know, I've never liked it because that sort of conjures up bad 90s image art. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely, in terms of writing, I had gotten to a point in my career where I thought that less is more. And I was sort of, you know, started out being the retarded cousin of Alan Moore, and it was, I'll do 13 panel pages and lots of captions. And I just thought, well, you know, if I really work hard at editing and pare all of this away to just the bare necessities, it's so much more powerful. That's how I feel about art, is that great artists do more with less. And, you know, especially looking at old Mazzucchelli Batman Year One stuff and just how devastating that is. So, yes, I always admire artists who are able to do a lot with just a few lines, which Pia does.
I think that my biggest influence was Romita Jr., and just that he was so good at that. You compare side by side something like Jim Lee or Charest or something, and you have Romita Jr., who would do like one single line down the back, and you got bulk, you've got weight and mass, and it's just incredible how he was able to do that. And I always love that, just being able to do that very zen of bringing out the basic essence of anything can. It's not easy to do, but I know how important it is. I mean, I started reading comics, it was just head first into X-Men, and it was really difficult at first because it was a lot of stuff I didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But it was because Byrne was so simple and basic in what he did that it was still very inviting. And when there were other books that were harder to read, I always remembered, why was it why was this harder to read than this? And so I think maybe because I just approached it different, you know, I came in very, very raw, so I understand what it's like for someone just coming to the medium, how confusing it can be. So I generally tend to, like, want people to feel welcome as possible. And the best way to do that is essence, essence, essence. You have to get the very idea down simply.
Well, that's definitely an important factor.
All the details that are necessary and none that aren't.
Yeah.
Now, here's since we have you both on air, we can ask about the collaboration aspect. Because you're mentioning earlier over lunch that I guess the page or the script would be, in a lot of ways, pretty minimal. Is that something for you, Brian, like kind of want to make sure, like, not to, I guess, provide too much direction, you know, stepping far away from the Alan Moore School?
All of my scripts are different for each of the artists, but definitely, I mean, if you look at the script for Why Number One, where, you know, P and I had just met and I'd seen her sketches, it was so overwritten, you know, and so over-directed because I had such a clear vision in my head. But, you know, I think as soon as probably issue number three or so, it was just so readily apparent that Pia did not see what was in my head. She saw something that was so much better that it was pointless to try and tell her how to do things. It was, I think it really freed me to just worry about dialogue and sort of telling good, quick scenes, and I could just trust her so much to do it. So definitely, I think Pia's scripts are completely minimalist compared to scripts that I might do with working with other artists for the first time, certainly.
Yeah, I find anything that's overly descriptive, I just immediately break down. I was like, oh, God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm working on a script right now where it takes 3 pages of script to describe 1 page of art, mm-hmm. and that is so hard. It's you have to, like, get the highlighter and just find the pertinent points and just ignore the rest as much as possible, but... Yeah, it's very challenging. I'd just like to be able to have that room to go, yeah, I think there should be a light in this corner, and this is how it should work. Yeah, that'll look good. And yeah, that's just the way my brain sees it when I read the script.
Brian, were you ever surprised with where Pia would take the script visually?
You know, surprised isn't the right word, because I've been surprised by other artists in the past, and it's usually a bad thing. Oh, you decided not to draw anything that I said. It was just...
It's a snowy field.
Exactly. It was, I was always delighted, and I think I was just shocked. I was actually describing to someone recently, because working in television now, and we have a couple new characters on Lost this season that you cast.
Which launches tonight.
Not that they need the plug, but when you cast actors, you end up writing not just for the characters, but for those actors, their strong suits. And I think getting the first issue in, I immediately saw Yorick and 355 and all these characters that I thought I knew in such a new light. They became so alive for me that I started writing for Pia's characters, and the book just got so much better because of that. So I was surprised at how much I would even come to like characters I thought I would hate. Dr. Mann in particular, I thought would just be sort of annoying, and I really came to love her largely because of Pia's art. So in that respect, I was surprised.
Well, that's something funny. Like, I sat down and read the whole run over a couple of days, and that's a big commitment. A lot of comics. It's a big stack.
I haven't even done that yet.
And the one thing I noticed, like, you know, going back to the beginning, is I didn't even like some of the characters at the beginning. Like, Yorick's mom, like, oh, did not like her. Yorick at the beginning, like, pretty bratty and stuff. Was
sure.
that something like...
Well, he was quite young at
he
the
was
beginning.
Yeah. Young and naive.
Yeah.
Yes. Was that something kind of important, is to, like, to really keep the characters more three-dimensional and less of the two-dimensional standard characterization?
Well, you know, in terms of York, I sort of retroactively tell everyone that, you know, it's about this journey from being an annoying kid. But I think because I was an annoying kid when I started writing the story, that I really thought Yorick was totally lovable and a good representation. I thought I was really putting all of my best qualities into a character. And so when the book came out, and everyone was like, I love the book, but Yorick is such a complete dick, and I really, really dislike him. It was really eye-opening. And
the thing that
I had to sort of take a hard look at myself.
I never got that. I mean, like, when I read York, it's like, I totally felt very similar. Like, I didn't think he was an annoying character at all. It's like, oh, he's really interesting. He's young, and he's kind of snarky. But, and then I started hearing this feedback, and it's like, wow, that's a really radical interpretation that I didn't see.
I didn't respond to him that way at all. Like, I just thought he was a bit of a smart ass and, like, kind of clever and...
Maybe it was because I went crazy reading it all in one session.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I read the first, like maybe up to book six, I read as it came out, and then I read the whole second half at once. And even as I was reading it, I was thinking this would have been a completely different experience if I had read it as it was being published.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's more like a real-time experience, and now that's lost to people if they haven't read it yet.
They could force themselves to read it very slowly to get the collections and only allow themselves 22 pages a month.
Well, that's something fascinating is people really have jumped into this series just head first going into it because I was the local comic store, they had a sale, and like one guy came in and like bought the run. All like 9 trades and then the issues and stuff, and it's like quite amazing how I don't know.
He's really screwed if he hates the first book. Big investment.
Oh, I'm sure someone will buy it.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be disappointed.
There's a lot of other comics I wish I didn't buy that I bought.
Well, you kind of do feel sorry for people who do buy them all in one go after this because they don't get to have the torture that we really crafted on people.
Yeah.
And we really got a kick out of that, just making people squirm. And that was what I think really pushed me. I had a lot of times knowing, this is going to drive people crazy. I can't wait to do this.
Waiting to find out if 355 is dead.
Oh, I guess we should let people know that because the last issue of Why the Last Man came out yesterday, there could be spoilers. Spoiler alert, but I'm sure there's enough conversation online that it's been
pretty hard to avoid.
Yeah.
I spoiled it for myself because I couldn't get the issue yesterday, so I read about it before I read it. So I only read like the bare bones details, and I still had a great experience reading the final issue.
She was sitting in the lounge here while P and I were getting set up in the studio,
trying not to cry.
Now, Pia, for yourself, this was your first big epic project. How's it been for you? Your own change in art, and really, what kind of stuff have you learned while doing this? I've got like a huge question right there.
Oh, I think I just learned how to handle like the fact that the deadlines are not to be messed with. I mean, before, you know, when you're an indie slacker, you can get away with shit, but not really in the big times. You really have to meet it up and keep people informed and not, you know, disappear off the face of the earth and try and hole up hoping no one will notice. But it's I think it made me a little more responsible, although I think I've kind of pissed off a lot of people at the same time because I am a slow artist and I wish I was faster, but I have gotten some better ways of handling it, and so I'm pretty happy about that. I learned a lot about streamlining and how to deal with schedules, and mostly it's just been an overwhelming experience. So much of it you spend alone, but then you get these brief blasts of contact with people at cons, and you learn so much in this one weekend, and then you're back to being alone, and you incorporate what you've learned as you go.
Comics are the far most isolating industry.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're really working in a void until that moment of contact with your public.
But I think it's just just learning a lot of like just technical stuff and learning how this whole industry works. It's just it's been eye opening. It's not what I expected it to be at all. I don't think I was at all prepared for it, and so there were times where it was tough. But I'm learning.
Were you expecting? Because I'll be honest, Vertigo, a lot of stuff doesn't make it to their full. I'm sure the writers have this great idea in mind, and it, you know, unfortunately, you know, it is a mainstream publisher and they have standards. Were you guys prepared for just in case?
Maybe fortunately they have standards.
Hey now.
I think I'm going to let Brian answer this one.
Someone asked me the other day, what would we have done if we gotten canceled at, you know, issue number 8 or something? Would we have just tried to wrap it up or left it open-ended? And it was really the first time I'd ever considered it, because pitching it, I knew there was no chance it was even going to get greenlit. You know, no one had heard of me, and if they did, they knew me because I just tanked the Swamp Thing franchise. So I didn't think that the project would ever get greenlit. But honestly, when I saw the pages come in, Pia's pages for issue number one, I really just, I was so conceited or crazy, but I thought, well, this, it works. It works completely in a way that nothing I'd done before, and I really didn't doubt that it would survive till 60. I had no idea it would do as well as it did, but I thought we would always have just enough readers to justify our existence.
So I didn't have that. I thought we'd be really lucky to make it to 5 because I'd just been involved in so many books that tanked, and ones where I was so confident that it would be when it's like, I'm not going to put my hopes in this. I love it. I'm going to do my best on it. But if it tanks, I will just move on and it'll be okay. And but you know, then it didn't, and I was like, holy cow! And it went in places I had no idea. And I think that's the good thing about not having high expectations, that when they do kind of meet up, you know, or when they do kind of come through, you get so wonderfully surprised. So it made it a lot happier, I think.
But Pia, were you horrified? Like, I was just reading Patrick Stewart when he signed on to be Captain Picard for Star Trek. Everyone was like, wow, it's a 6-year contract.
Yeah.
But he's like, it'll get canceled right away. When it started to do well, were you like, oh, no, now I have to do this forever?
There were times where that kind of crossed my mind. Like, oh, my God, I got 5 years ahead. Don't think about it. Just do it. You know? And, yeah, I mean, I actually did think about Patrick Stewart quite frequently because I remember reading about how he was set up in a hotel room thinking he was only going to be there for, you know, to do the pilot and then go home.
Right.
And I think the same situation's now with House, like with Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie, yeah.
Same situation. It's like, and yeah, you get to that point where you're like, oh my God, this is taking off.
Aww.
This is, I can't do anything fun for the, like, that I want to do for the next little while. I have a lot of ideas, but can't work on them until this is done. And oh my gosh. And so you just find ways to make it like, to show, to think that this is going to be good. So you put all your focus and your love into it, and I think that's why you get to the end, and it is so difficult to get to the end. I mean, I was crying my eyes out at the table because, you know, I put my heart into this because, you know, there's a point where you got to go, I'm committing to it. I love it. I'm going
to
do it.
Well, and you become so close to your own characters. And
You see that movie Night on Earth? There's that Finnish story, because I'm Finnish, and of course I love that story, but it was about the taxi driver relating about their kid and when he... His wife had a kid, and they said the kid wasn't going to survive. So they decided they're just not going to put any love into it because it's going to die. So they're not going to put any. They're not going to get emotionally invested. But then the child survived about 5 days, and the couple decided we're going to love it now. We're going to love it and love it and love it. And they did, and then the kid died, and it was devastating. And so it's like that. There's a point where you go, we're going to love it no matter what. And I think I got to that. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, so everyone is wondering why the final issue is such a downer. It's you can tell.
I didn't think it was a downer.
Yeah, I mean it was sad. Like there were sad parts, but
I didn't think it was that sad of an ending.
No, it's
a beautiful ending.
It's,
it works.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of speculation on how it's going to end, and I remember last month, though, a friend of mine said that he had seen like an image of the cover, like with Yorick and this old man in a cell with the straight jacket on, and it was like, oh no, and I'm like, there's no way it was all a dream. Like, there's no way they would do that, right? And then it's just like, well, how will it end? And like, it would be so. I thought, geez, it'll be really hard to not have an unsatisfactory ending. But the ending's, like, totally satisfactory.
Yep.
I have to say, when we saw Massimo's cover, Pia and I loved
it,
but we were both afraid, to, you know, does it give away too much? Will people figure out it's in the future? And I was half relieved that everyone didn't jump to that conclusion, but I was more disappointed that everyone was like, oh, it's all been a dream. Like, honestly, after 5.5 years, that's as much credit as you give it. With the worst third grade ending to any story.
No, I never believed for a second that would be how it would end. And I think you're both like stellar talents, but it's just this case of collaboration where like the whole like exceeds the sum of its parts. And I don't say that at all to disparage, because I mean, you know, it's brilliant writing and Pia's a brilliant artist, but it's like the marriage of the two things. makes it like such a brilliant endeavor.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's I'm gonna make a small comparison, like getting the closure from it. Just thinking back to the last Vertigo series, and that had the finite, the ending finally in Preacher, where it was just like, what the. You know, I just want to throw the book away. It's like all this great stuff. Sorry if, there's fans of it. I love Preacher.
I haven't read it yet.
The last, it just ends on a sour note. It's like, it just kind of like they stop wanting to do it. It's just like, okay, we got to end it. And I guess maybe it's the passion that you guys have here.
Et cetera.
Yeah. But I digress.
And with the big et cetera and so on.
And so on. I'm going to do a quick music break, I think. We're going to play one of Pia's picks.
This one is called Esther's from Eamon Thoman, and it makes me think of motorcycles and tigers.
Well, I think that goes with some of what we've been reading.
There's some lionesses. I don't remember any tigers.
No, but there's a lot of motorcycles. Inkstead.CITR 101.9 FM. Our guests are Pia Guerra and Brian Kavon, and we'll be right back. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstuds Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. I'm just going to let people know some upcoming shows because we're about halfway through the hour while Pia sits there and signs a stack of wide trades I brought in. Next week, I'll be joined by Paul Hornschmeyer, a wonderful cartoonist who's done some great stuff for Fantagraphics. Three Paradoxes is his latest book, and Forlorn Funnies was a series, and I love his stuff. I'm a huge fan, so I can't wait to chat with him. Future guests will include Skip Williamson, Dave Sim. and then March will be my focus on women in comics. It'll be a month of nothing but women. And so far I've got for sure Francois Mouly from Raw Magazine, Dinah Schutz. Who was I saying earlier?
Phoebe Gleckner.
Phoebe Gleckner, as well as some...
Jessica Abel.
Jessica Abel isn't for sure yet, but hopefully. I've got to just double check. She just... She just gave birth. So hopefully she'll be up for... And then... yeah, some other smaller cartoonists. And this, we still have in Vancouver the Inkstuds Art Show at the Gem Gallery, of which you can find artwork by both Pia, has a couple of Y pages up there, and Robin, my friend sitting across from me.
That's right. I have a last name, too. It's Constabaris.
There's about five people named Robin in the comic scene in Vancouver. And also, you may hear some other chuckles in the studio. We're joined by Ian and Pia's sister. I don't know your name.
Vicky.
It's Vicky.
Vicky. Hi, Vicky.
Hi.
There we go. So we have a full room in here. Unfortunately, Ian and Vicky won't be able to hear what Brian has to say, but they can pretend.
Screw them.
So you wanted to say something, Robin?
Oh, I was going to expose you as a big comic geek for getting Pia to sign all your Y's on the break, but then you exposed yourself.
You didn't see me harassing Seth when he came to town with a huge stack of things, including making him draw on my Mr. X bound hardcover of all the issues.
It's okay. My last issue of Y got snuck into the stack.
There we go. So, I guess welcome back. Once again, we're joined by Pia Guerra and Brian K. Vaughan discussing the last issue of Y, which came out yesterday. My headphones kind of buzzing when I talk. Is it really doing that?
You no, got okay? Can't hear
no, I just have crappy headphones.
Online.
I don't want to be it's annoying people. I would, you know, the two of you have been kind of the pillar of the Y series. But tell us about some of the other folks that have been partaking in the epic.
Pia, you want to start? Or,
sure. Well, the first one we had was I was working on the book 2 years straight. Needed a break. And so we asked Paul Chadwick to come on board, and I love Concrete, and I was so excited to have him on board. And he did this great two-issue arc. Comedy and Tragedy?
Comedy and Tragedy.
Yes, and it was wonderful. I was just so happy, and I love the style that it was in, and Jose did a beautiful job on the inks, and it was just weird how it blended so nicely with the art that came before it. It was almost seamless. A lot of...
I gotta say, I was pretty impressed to see Paul Chadwick on there because, you know, if you've checked out the Inkstuds, we're mainly focused on sort of stuff. And Paul Chadwick, nothing but respect. I mean, I love Concrete. It's just fantastic. And, like, what was the choice to get Paul in there?
I had met him at a convention in San Diego. I went up to him and told him that Concrete was one of the biggest influences in my life of not just comics, but... writing and art in general, and he seemed genuinely flattered, and so that no one had in his life had ever told him that he had influenced them, which I found impossible to believe.
Mm-hmm.
But we had kept in touch after that, and so when there was this opportunity to do two issues, he was kind enough to jump in. Did a lovely job, as did not just one guy named Garand, but two Garands. Goran Karloff and Goran Sadzuka. Who both did equally lovely arcs for us.
Mm-hmm. And they're both Croatian?
They're both Croatian superstars.
They actually worked together on a book in Croatia, and I'm damned if I can remember what it is. But, beautiful work, incredible artists, and they did a wonderful job coming in, and they really helped.
There's some fantastic Croatian talents, unfortunately, because mm-hmm. of the strife that happened there. You know, probably aren't as easy to get their foot into doors as others, so it's nice to see.
But they are, yes, extremely talented and love to work, or just crazy workers in a way that we dirty Westerners are not. We have to thank Jose Marzan Jr. He's mm-hmm. one of the few guys who was there every single panel of all 60 issues. And I was always surprised because I think Paul and the Garands and P. all have radically different styles, but sometimes people wouldn't even notice that we'd brought in a guest artist, which is always shocking to me, but... Jose has a really clean, unifying style that the book always felt like the book, even when Pia had to step away, which is a big testament to his skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did a wonderful job.
How detailed do you give him pencils?
I go crazy full board overly detailed, and maybe I shouldn't, but I think there was a point halfway through where I was like making everything so detailed because I just want to make sure that, you know, nothing was too confusing, you know, because I've had trouble in the past with inkers who didn't know what the hell I was doing, and I didn't want to confuse anybody. And then at some point he goes, well, you know, when I used to work on X-Men, some of the artists would just go, draw X-Mansion here. And I was like, wow, okay.
And, that's back in the day where they do, like, photocopy faces.
Yeah.
So, I know Travis Charis did a lot of those.
And like, then it got to a point where it's like I was able to back off a bit on the backgrounds and just go, like, I don't need a ruler. Jose can do it. And then that was much later, though. It was really hard to get to that point, but I'm really grateful that he was cool about it.
Now, Brian, how did Pia kind of change, or did she change what you were doing with Y?
Yeah, no, very significantly. Like I said, I think at first it was just changing the characters, the way I wrote them. I think she pushed me to write them better because they were no longer comic strip characters. They were human beings, and so I felt an obligation to sort of make them more full and complete. But we were talking before about how a not small segment of the readership just really didn't like York. And even when they like the book, they didn't like him. And I'm always okay with that. I think, you know, some of my favorite fiction stars characters that you don't like and you're probably not supposed to like. But
I'm a huge Bukowski fan.
Sure. So, well, there you go. There's barely a likable person than anything that's written. But with York, it was frustrating, though, that people didn't seem to understand him. And so I think Safe Word is what we always bring up as this arc early on where people really understood York. And that's entirely because of Pia and just our discussions. And, you know, starting with something small, Pia just saying, well, if he's an escape artist, a hilarious antagonist would be a mistress of bondage. And I thought that was uncannily brilliant. And a lot of Safe Words spun out of that. I really think that's sort of the arc where we started working together best, that I think it had great art and great writing before that, but the book we sort of dovetailed perfectly there. And yeah, the book changed for the better at that point.
It's nice. It is. It's nice. I love seeing collaboration. I mean, because a lot of the stuff we focus on the show is alternative stuff, so it's mostly one person doing their comic strip. You know, I mean, people like Seth, Chester Brown, Joe Matt, Joe Sacco. But it's interesting for me seeing like the different aspect of the collaboration and how that kind of changes things.
Well, I think it changes the tone of your story because, I mean, I know there's plenty of times where you see books where the writer is so controlling over it, and that's sometimes that works, but you can sort of see that it comes through that the artist is like, if the artist has an idea and throws it out there, and either the editor and the writer and all of them are like, that's nice, just draw the pictures.
Yeah.
And I've been in those situations, and you don't really feel like it's something that you're contributing to. It's not your baby.
It's more graphic design than
yeah. You just
comics.
Feel like you're working on someone else's.
You're
thing.
On the assembly line.
Yeah, and when you get to the point where it's like, oh, I have an idea, let's see what he thinks, and then you just feel like, oh, I feel like I'm contributing and helping build this. You know, I'm not just the guy painting the side of the building. I'm actually helping build it. So it comes through in the writing. I think it just it becomes more of a labor of love.
Well, it probably makes the art better too because you're more
invested.
Yeah.
Again, it's loving the baby kind of thing.
Yeah. Like I just read that article, the interview, Pia, that you gave where she described this, I thought, entirely accurately as Bart and Lisa Simpson. Pia is Bart and I'm Lisa. Right. If I had written a novel or done this with someone else, it would have been a very Lisa Simpson book. It would have been very homework heavy and polite and ultimately pretty boring.
And I just like to run around in the yard with my ninjas.
I love cartoonists and that singular vision. I do think the book benefited greatly from getting the Bart-Lisa balance.
What? It's funny you should say homework heavy because a lot of times when I was reading Y, just because like they travel to so many different places and a lot of the details, I would wonder, like, how accurate is that? Like, is there really a bomb shelter in the White House?
And there is.
Yeah, I wondered, like, do you just have, like, this vast suppository of those kinds of details in your brain, or would you, like, go and, like, research those kinds of things so you could write them in?
Depository.
Depository? Yeah. Thanks.
Depository.
See, she's got a little Lisa in her too. Yes, no, I mean there was always a ton of research, and I think P and I both had experiences, because as much as she claims to be Bart, she's a big nerd too and loves doing this research. But there would be times where, you know, like I sort of back in the dial-up days, where I would go to the Park Slope Barnes & Noble to just do my research there instead of the internet, and I would ask the people, I'd be like, you know, behind the counter, I'd say, do you have any books on weaponized infectious diseases, and also anything that might have a map of the White House?
I know. I've been waiting for years to have White Van show up up front, because I'm pulling all this stuff off of Google, satellite maps of the White House, because the North Lawn, there's no pictures of this north of the North Lawn. The Rose Garden in the South, fine, but the North is really tricky, so I had to go through all these places to find it. And at the same time, I'm also researching SAM missiles, all this stuff. Like, I must look really scary to somebody going through my directory. And when I heard about the Patriot Act coming in, I was like, terrified, because I'm gonna get arrested. Just
well,
for
writing your subversive comic,
yeah.
Some kind of angry feminist.
Plus, on top of that, you know, it got a name that's basically literally translate to pious war. So they're gonna think I'm some kind of jihadist. It's just it was frightening. But so far, no nothing. So I'm pretty happy about that.
So what you're saying is the level of accuracy in the details is quite high.
It's quite high, yes.
Yeah.
We didn't want people to be, I mean, I don't very often get people going, oh, you did this wrong, but I've had that in the past, and I didn't want that to happen, because the idea is to have this feel like a real place. So you research everything. You research the type of guns, even the clothes, anything that, you know, anything to help make it feel a little more real is an asset. And so I went overboard, but I think it was worth it in the end.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you went overboard.
No.
I would. Pia is the most annoying editor to work with. Because anytime I'd send in a script, there would always be the, you know, are you sure this is actually possible? And like, actually, this location, I found out this. She knows so much about everything. And sometimes I'd
that's
be like,
the
look,
Lisa.
It's just a story. Let's just, but she was really good keeping me honest.
There was one thing with the Amazons that I was going to push, but then I thought, no one's probably going to even remember it. But I remember from Shawshank Redemption, there's a little bit of trivia in there that if you have a brain injury, your muscles will go rigid.
Your jaw clamps.
Right.
Yeah, I remember
so
that.
So there's that scene with Victoria with holding a gun with her finger on the trigger on Yorick's head. And I'm thinking, okay, she's getting an accident head. As soon as that happens, her muscles will tighten up and he'll get shot anyway. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to push it. I'll just fake it. And we'll just hope no one notices it.
And I think you lost a bit of yourself
the
for that.
Whole story's
look, I have shot many a woman before. It did not happen. So that trumps Pia's I saw in a movie once.
But I would have brought that up, but I thought that's just way too geeky, and that's too nitpicky. But that's what goes through my head when I'm drawing a scene.
Now, reading why, Brian, it seems like you have an expectation of your readers, like a certain, I don't want to say education, but you expect them to know shit. Is that kind of...
I don't know. I guess because I try not to think about the audience really ever, other than, you know, I like writing something that Pia won't hate drawing and that I will like reading. And so, you know, I only ever wrote it for us. And I know, at least me, I'm a barely educated film school student. So, you know, I never wanted it to be... I guess sometimes I'm curious. I read reviews where people say, oh, you know, there's so many factoids in this script, and Brian is trying to show how smart he is. And that, to me, is like seeing an action movie and like, oh, the director is trying to show how tough he is by doing this. I don't see the correlation. It was never about, you know, showing how smart we were. It was always, you know, what would push the story along. And unfortunately, we had a cast that contained some very smart people, smarter than I, at least. So it required to at least write dialogue that sounded authentically smart. But At the same time, it's always balanced by York, who's essentially a pretty dumb guy and a good audience surrogate. So, no, I think, and I'm sure we have plenty of dumb fans, too. So hopefully we were not discriminating against education levels.
Well, and that's what I feel is like maybe one of the keys to the success is that you're not pandering.
Yeah, I pandering to myself, if anything.
I think so. it's always a smart thing never to talk down to your audience. Always assume that they know more than you do, and that just it's a safe place to tackle any story. Really,
really, just take it to the back to the Star Trek analogies where.
Oh God, I hate Star Trek so much.
I'll just say the Patrick Stewart thing. You know, yeah. No, I'm yeah.
Okay.
I'm not a
Trekkie. No, it's okay. I used to be. I was when I was very young, and then I grew up and went, oh, this is kind of boring. But it kind of got funny after a while when you listen to the analogies and how it's like, so it's like a balloon blowing up, and then and you're going to ride the wave just like a surf. You're like, oh, just stop. You know, I like science fiction. I'm a huge science fiction fan, but I think that went a little over the top for me.
Yeah. I totally forgot what to reference.
It's funny because in Y there's like so many cultural references, but well, none of them are Star Trek though.
I don't know. I think I'm sure there's at least one Star Trek joke, and I think when Yorick finds 355 and Dr. Mann getting it on, he says that it's like Spock Kirk. Fiction.
No, not Spock Kirk. It was Spock McCoy.
Oh, yeah.
I love being corrected about my own book. That's so flattering. You're totally right.
I sat down and went crazy reading it.
Yeah, so, even for every highbrow reference about the Kalahari Bush people, there's a really bad gay Star Trek joke.
Well, what would the world be without gay Star Trek jokes?
I agree.
I just wouldn't want to live in it.
Well, in that situation, who wouldn't be cracking one?
No. How important is it for both of you to be so approachable by your fans? Because I look, and like, Brian, you've got the forum, which you're probably the most active person on there. And I'm just looking, it's like all these things. But that's great. I think it's great, like, being involved with your audience. Is that really important to both of you? Because I know, Pia, you do the whole fans send in, you know, boards with...
Yeah. I spend most of my time on Bendis because it's a faster-moving board. I'm so ADD. I just need new threads. And it's like, Brian's board is too slow. I have to go to Bendis now.
I spend a lot of time on the Bendis board, too. I just work. He is our preferred bald Brian, I think.
Yeah.
To hang out there. But I don't know, Pia, do you like being... Is it important to you to
be approachable? Well, because I think just because of the fact that, you know, we didn't get canceled because, of, you know, the readership just took off out of word of mouth. That's our bread and butter. And, yeah, I'm so grateful to them. We really wouldn't have made it this far without that. And, of course, they deserve the accessibility. I mean, I think there's a point where he's like, no, you can't come over to my house. But I'm totally open to that. Although on Facebook, I'm very limiting. So if anyone's wondering why they keep getting ignored, it's like, it's just my personal black book, okay? It's for people I need to talk to. And so don't feel offended. Go to MySpace.
Yes, honestly, it's kind of a necessary evil for me, and I love, and I, you know, I'm a better person for getting to know all these people who are nice enough to like my books. But I also think there's something to be gained by writers being read and not heard. That, you know, I never like explaining or defending the books. I just like the work to speak for itself. And the temptation is always there when you see someone whose interpretation doesn't match your intent to say something, or for them to feel like, oh, you know, I knew this was going on in Brian's life, this book, so I try and read that into the issue. Mm-hmm. So I kind of prefer anonymity, but I think especially in comics when the difference, you know, between a hit comic and a failure can be as little as 5,000, that you really have an obligation to get out.
Totally.
And move the book, and if that means being accessible, that's, you know.
And I admire your ability to stand back from, like, let the product stand, because there are times where I kind of forget that, and there's a fellow on your board where who always has these posts about 355's hair, and then I just have to go on. It's like, are you kidding me? There's no way there are hair salons in a post-apocalyptic world. And she does not have henna in her hair. She's got no time for this. And I look back on it, it's like, wow, that was a silly argument to get into, but I really had to get into that. But I try to keep it limited.
It's more of the Lisa Simpson.
Yeah.
It's in you. Brian, you've mentioned before Yorick being, you know, a reflection of yourself. What other kind of auto-bio elements have you brought into this?
Well, you know, I suppose every character, no matter, you know, Dr. Mann is my complete opposite, but I'm sure even she has a little bit of me somewhere in her. But I think, you know, I've been talking a lot recently, which I just made the realization a few months ago that this probably had an impact on the book, the fact that I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, and I used to spend a lot of time being in plays where we had sister schools, all-girls schools, and when they would need to put on plays, they would sort of, you know, send out bulletins for we need a couple guys from the school, and I thought that was just a cheap, awesome way to meet girls. So that experience of walking through the hallways where, you know, women are in this safe environment where just them all day long, and just the stares of revulsion and horror and, like, you know, a bit of titillation, I'm sure that had a really dramatic impact on thinking about gender and the differences and the similarities between the two sexes. So that was probably the seed of the book was, I'm sure, planted in those years.
That's funny. We actually barely even talked about gender in this conversation so far.
Yay!
I'm sorry to be the one to drop the obligatory G-bomb.
Oh, that's okay. How about you, Pia? What kind of elements of yourself have you put into the story?
I think just growing up as a very tomboyish, I was just a very rowdy kid, and I used to, like, just come home every day with scrapes and bruises, and from having done stunts on my bike, I'd, like, stand on the seat and run through alleys strewn with glass. It was just something. I was just a very active kid, and I loved cartoons. I loved manga. I loved anime, and it was just all of that kind of came in there because I was always pushing for, like, can we do something a little more exciting here? And I think that kind of bled through. It was just that sense that, you know, the little ADD kid needs to have something to play with, and so I think that's my side of it.
Now, we're nearing the end of our time, our allotted time. Do you guys have any kind of last comments on why?
Pia?
it's been incredible. I wouldn't have half the experiences that are, like, some amazing experiences as a result of this book. I'm really grateful for it. I've seen places that I'd never thought I'd get to, and it's been wonderful. I love everything I've learned from this and everything that I've been able to do because of this. And it's unforgettable, wonderful experience.
Fabulous.
Yeah, I saw Garth Ennis in New York recently, and he said, get ready to spend the rest of your life with everyone telling you they don't like your new stuff as much as your old stuff. I really am okay with that. I look forward to doing more work, and I'm sure it will be more personal, but I don't think I'll ever do anything that will appeal to as many people, and I think we were just lucky enough to catch lightning in a bottle with this, and it was the best 5.5 years of my life so far, so I'm very grateful for it.
Well, I guess Mazel Tov is the operative word here. Would it be?
We'll take it.
We'll
sure.
take it.
Yep.
Well, thanks for taking some time out of your busy schedule to join us today, Brian.
Thank you. See you next week.
See you next week. That's going to be so much fun.
Do you guys want to quickly mention what's happening next week?
Yes, Why the Last Party. Meltdown Comics in L.A. is hosting this wonderful charity event for CBD Health. And It's
comic book legal defense fund.
Yep, and it's just going to be a send off for Why, and we're going to have a keynote speech by Joss Whedon, which just blows my mind every time I think about it.
You may not be a Star Trek geek, but you are a Buffy geek.
Oh, yes.
We both are. So yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer creator there, and there will be some $25 tickets available at the door.
So
the
line
day
up
the next
early.
Friday.
Wow,
that's exciting.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Brian.
Oh, congratulations.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
And I'm going to end off with the Rolling Stones Monkey Man, I think.
Sweet.
There we go. Because, you know, who doesn't love a monkey? Thanks, Brian.
Take care, guys.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
CITR 101.9 FM Ink Studs. Join us next week. Remember, Paul Hornschmeyer will be on. And up next is Crimes and Treasons.
Before you push the button, I'd like to say thank you, Pia.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pia. Thanks for coming.
Robin.
And thank you, Ian and Vicky, for popping by.
Thank you.
Yay.
And I'm glad you are.